Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Matez, and I'm joined by Tim Legler. Legs, three games last night, three series, find themselves at 1-1. Lots to talk about today.
Yeah, we didn't get the drama of Monday night, but you know, how could you ever? But still some interesting things taking place in these series, particularly Dallas and the Clippers and Pacers-Milwaukee now evened up at 1.
Yeah, so we have a lot to get to. We're going to talk about all three series because all three of them have notes that we want to get into, but we're going to start with Mavs. We're going to move on to the Wolves series, and then we'll finish up with the Bucks and the Pacers. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings Sportsbook. This is brought to you by DraftKings Pick 6. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code ALLNBA. We'll be talking a little bit more about that app later on in the show. All right, Legs, let's get right into it because we got so much, and I know yesterday we even went a little bit long, but Mavs, Clippers, you're going to have to – all three of these games, I'm going to have similar notes in that I was unimpressed, I think, by all of the teams a little bit. Like, this was a game where the Mavs won it, so you're impressed especially with how they closed it, in particular Luka Doncic. But 96-93, Kawhi comes back. I felt like this was more of a – this felt more like a game seven or later in the series, a defensive battle where both offenses struggled. That was my big takeaway from it. But I'm curious what you saw from this game. And were you impressed with the Mavericks?
I was impressed with the Mavericks big time in the fourth quarter. I was impressed with the Mavericks, how they closed the game. Because things got dicey, very dicey. I mean, you're talking about maybe the series hanging in the balance. You're in a one-possession game. You're down, actually, at one point. I think they were down 6 points in the fourth quarter. You're talking about going down 2-0. Just historically, how many teams win series when you've got to come back from 2-0? Just the math, particularly when Kawhi Leonard – you expect to get stronger as the series goes. You know, you don't get either of these first two games, and Kawhi misses one and is kind of feeling his way out in the second one, and they almost lose this game. So I'm very impressed with how they closed and what happened in that quarter and the shot making of some of their other guys. Critical. So that to me is the big takeaway for the Mavericks, because you're right. This isn't them at their best. This isn't their best offense they've played in these two games. And you know Luka's due to have one of these games where he strings together some of these threes. He's just not making that shot right now. He made a couple big ones late, but in general in the two games, he's getting that shot whenever he wants, like he typically does, but it's just not – I think it's kind of flat. It's not going in at a high rate. I think he's due to have one of those games, you know, where he hits seven or eight threes, because he's getting the shot at such a high frequency right now against these defenses. So overall, their offense wasn't great. I don't think Luka was great by any means in this game, which is a good sign. They still won it, primarily because of the way they handled the pressure moments in the fourth quarter. And I'll give P.J. Washington a lot of credit, man. Made a couple of huge corner threes. Moxie Kleba made a huge three. Kyrie hit a big three. When they were down six, Luka and Kyrie go back-to-back on threes. So their deep shooting under enormous pressure in the moment, that impressed me. But overall, you know, I think your take on the game is right. It felt like two teams sort of in the mud a little bit. And look, Dallas had the number one defensive team in the league by metrics over the last 20 games. So they can defend. We know the Clippers are capable of defending. So you have two good defensive teams. you know, could lead to some of this, but I also thought it was just some poor shot making, inability to make shots when guys were open, finishing the paint wasn't a masterpiece. So it comes down to which team's going to step up, make plays when they have to. And clearly that was Dallas, and give them credit because, like I said, man, you go down 0-2 with Kawhi expected to get better as the series goes. I think you're in a tough spot if you're Dallas.
I'm glad you brought up the shot making because you said exactly how I feel about this game. You know, we just talked about Denver and we raved about them pulling out a game where they did not play well. So I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth. Dallas pulled out a game where they didn't play well offensively and didn't shoot well. So I want to also praise them for that. It was really good. But that's what I'm talking about is you kind of expect any of these teams, the six teams we're going to talk about, to find the moment where you're like, well, there they are. They're in their groove. We saw little pockets of it for Minnesota and Indiana when it mattered to open up the game. But Dallas last night, to your point, to me, it was the clutch shooting. And I'm glad you brought up PJ Washington because Luka, Kyrie, those guys stepped up big and hit some big time plays. But who else is going to do it? And last night, PJ Washington, 3 of 4. I think two of those threes came in the clutch, you know, big time shots down the stretch. So to me, he was sort of the player of the game. Not that he was the best player, but that he was the player that played more above what you expected in the key moments, both defensively and offensively. That's the type of performance, in my opinion, they need from those guys. And PJ Washington was it last night in 35 minutes.
100%, man. He was great. And I don't know. It's weird. It's like I'm watching him, and it's almost like I feel like right before my eyes, his body is transformed. Like he's leaner. He's quicker. He's faster. I think he's more impactful than anything they were going to get defensively out of Grant Williams. And clearly Grant Williams wasn't making shots. This is why they made this decision to go in this direction. It's an enormous pickup. I loved it the day they got PJ Washington. I didn't think that he would continue to like impress me more and more and more as this went on. I kind of felt like I got a pretty good feel of what PJ Washington's going to be for this team. I was wrong. I think he wasn't comfortable in the beginning. That's why he had some inconsistencies with his offense. I think now this is a normal stat line for him in terms of he's going to play 35 minutes a night. He's defensively doing a great job. And I think on a bad night, he's going to probably get you 12 points. And on a good night, he can push 20. And that's what they needed from him in this game. I was, you know, if you're a Mavericks fan, you had to be sitting there in the fourth quarter, man. You had to be nervous. Like, this is dicey right here. This is dicey stuff because you're down. It's a low-scoring game. So those 6-7 point deficits, man, that's a lot more when it's a low-scoring game. And you're really wondering, are we going to make enough shots to win the game? We're going to get enough stops. And the Clippers went cold during a key stretch in the fourth quarter as well. So it worked out simultaneously. And Dallas able to get the win. There's also a very interesting play in this game, Adam, late when the Clippers had to foul. I believe it was a three-point game. And they inbound the ball to Luka. He gets trapped in the corner in the backcourt.
Oh, man.
And he threw a pass that – and it's funny because he threw it. It immediately looked like it was going to be a turnover. Yep. Because he threw like this long two-handed bounce pass through traffic. Like Terrence Mann missed it by an inch, or that ball is deflected or possibly stolen in the backcourt, and now they get a chance to potentially tie the game. He gets it through there. Kyrie ends up with it, and they foul Kyrie in the front court. And it's so funny watching Luka's reaction. He turned to his own bench. It was kind of like laughing, like, okay, relax. Like, I got this. Like, you're way more nervous about that pass than I was. When they showed the replay from the baseline angle, you could see, okay, there was a bigger gap there than I thought.
There was an angle, yeah.
But the first time when in live action and the first replay they showed, I couldn't believe he attempted that pass. But it got through, and it was just funny to me how calm, cool, and collected the guy is to throw a pass that risky and then look at his bench like I knew the entire time what I was doing. So very impressed. His defense has been talked about a lot today. His own defensive effort, which is something I've talked about since the day he came into the league. Setting the tone, letting your teammates know you're willing to lay it on the line a little bit. His defense was very good. All in all, and look, this is not the score I expected, 96-93. I didn't think you'd be anywhere close to this going into game two. I thought this would be, you know, 112-108 type game. So very low scoring. Neither team played great offensively. In those kind of games, Adam, all that matters, who made the big plays when they had to be made, and that was Dallas.
I'm glad you called out the pass. You are right. I felt the exact same way you did, that it wasn't until this morning that I saw the baseline replay. And I was like, okay, that wasn't as crazy as it seemed to me. But live, I thought it was the most insane play a superstar player could make, that bounce pass, because it looked like a turnover the whole way. Yeah. I also like that you called out the defense, because I thought both Luka and Kyrie played good defense. I mean, the Mavs as a whole won this game with defense. And I thought both of those guys played great one-on-one defense, contained defense when they were, you know, out on an island having to guard their guys. And that stood out to me. But I'm curious, you know, Gafford had been such a big part of this team and didn't play a lot in the first game, you know, gets into foul trouble immediately, didn't play a lot in this one. Zubats has been a larger story offensively than I expected him to be in this series. And I have a feeling that's sort of why Dallas gained some stuff, I thought, later in this game by trapping and being, you know, rotating harder behind. And maybe that's the solve. Do you, now that we're two games into this, defensively, the Mavs still seem like they can, you know, play enough defense to win a series. But is Gafford, is this just not a series for Gafford and for them playing that way? Are they going to have to go away from him?
It might be. And I'm surprised because I was shocked at the beginning of game one when they came out and they went to Zubac like he's Shaq.
Yeah.
I mean, it was every trip and he was just backing Gafford under the rim and scoring on him at will. Look, Zubac is a guy that on the season, I believe, took 7 shots a game. Okay. Right. He's taken 17 and 12 shots in the two games. Okay. Yeah. So clearly going into it, they looked at Dallas. They looked at their front line, Gafford, Lively. Clearly, both guys very athletic, coming from the weak side as impact defenders. Those guys love to come off their man and go attack drivers at the rim from another spot. But if you throw the ball into their guy directly, neither one of those guys, you know, is particularly heavy. So they can get backed into compromising spots. You know, so Tyronn Lue, because it was obvious in game one, like, this is what they targeted. And we're going right at him to start the game. They did it. Gafford got in early foul trouble, was a complete non-factor in that game. Yesterday, same thing, 9 minutes. Now, he did get hurt in the game. He got hurt, and he tried to come back, and he went out again. He played 9 minutes. So this two games, complete non-entity for them, and he's been critical. We talked about Gafford a lot on this show since the day they picked him up because, you know, he had at one point, what did he make, you know, 30-something field goals in a row. I mean, right. We were talking about that streak at one point. He shot 82% for a month. Like, it's important to have that threat for Luka. It's just important because of the way that the backline defender has to react. You can't just overcommit to Luka when he starts to come down the lane. You have to wait because he's going to throw that lob perfectly timed. Gafford cleans it all up. Gafford's been a non-factor. And I'm starting to wonder, is he going to have any presence in this series? Because I do think they're going to need him. They're going to need some production from that spot, I believe. Because I think the Clippers, game one, Harden ran the show. He was incredible. The Mavericks couldn't throw it in the ocean. But it was Harden's game. That wasn't the case last night. They were kind of reacclimating Kawhi. It was a weird flow to their offense. It was just, he's not in rhythm. And he had the ball a lot, and now Harden wasn't nearly the factor. So let's see now what they can figure out to merge those two guys going into game three. I think their offense is going to be better, which means you're going to need more production if you're Dallas from somewhere. Where's it coming from? And Gafford's the likely guy, and I just don't know. Honestly, I do not know as we sit here what to expect in game three. One, is he healthy? And when two,
is he playing? Yeah.
What's he do about this Zubac thing? This guy is going at him like it's relentless the way he's attacking him. So I'm curious, as curious as you are. I really wish I knew, but I don't. I don't know the answer to that question. Is Gafford going to be a guy that's just completely a non-factor in this series? And if he is that a big problem for Dallas?
If we go to the Clippers side here for a little bit, Kawhi Leonard returns. I like the note you brought up, which is that they were almost disrupted by his return. He gets 15 points on 17 shots. Do you feel like this was your first game back? You miss game one, you come back game two. Your first game back is almost always, if you're a star player, you're going to throw off the rhythm just because how healthy are you and everything else. Yeah. Do you feel like from what you saw, this will be a one game where they're off rhythm and it's going to get better as the series goes on? Or do you foresee this as Harden? We talked about it last game. He is last time these two teams played, he is a system. So maybe it was easier for him when he didn't have to worry. How do you look at that?
I'm telling you, man, you know how I feel about James Harden. It's the deeper this thing goes, the tighter those elbows get. And I'm just telling you. So with Kawhi Leonard, here's the thing about Kawhi. I have so much respect for Kawhi Leonard and how he plays and the strength and balance he plays with and the shots that he gets for himself. I can't see Kawhi Leonard going through more than two games or a game and a half where he's like still clearly like hasn't quite found his rhythm on his shot. He's just too good. He's too precise. And so that's going to come. You know, will that come in the second half of game three? Will that be one more game? Will it be game four? It's gonna come. And when it after it does come, I think you're going to see, you know, Kawhi Leonard, how we typically see him the rest of the way. The question is going to be, how does that affect Harden? And the deeper you get into the series, if this becomes a 2-2 situation and we got a game five, or it's, you know, the Clippers are down 3-2 and you got to have game six and seven, how does Harden react to that? Because the ball's going to be going through Kawhi. We get it. I trust Kawhi. He deserves that level of belief in us. He's proven it, what he's capable of. Those other guys, I got major questions as this series gets deeper. And I just had this conversation with somebody. Let's go down all those guys. Do you think Luka's deserved that right to be trusted? Yes. Has Kyrie? Yes. He's been good and brought under bright lights, man. He's proven that. So has Kawhi Leonard. Those other guys, James Harden, Paul George, even Westbrook, who you're not going to deny is going to bring all the energy in the world, is his decision-making going to be great? So I look at that situation. I think that's what Dallas is going to kind of count on. They've got the one guy that's going to – Luka, he's going to have an answer for everything because he's going to outscore Kawhi Leonard in every game in this series. I would be shocked if he didn't. But he's also going to create 20 to 25 points of offense for people. Kawhi's not going to create that. So it's those other guys. If they're on their game and they're stepping into shots and they're playing with confidence off of Kawhi, Clippers will win the series. I'm banking on that not happening because I have more faith in Kawhi and Kyrie ultimately as long as – look – those role players make enough threes when they have to. They're going to get opportunities. The guys I mentioned, Washington and Kleba and Tim Hardaway, you know, who's now injured. Hopefully he can come back and play for them. Those guys are going to get shots. They're going to have to step into them and make them when it counts. But the main principles, the stars in this series, Dallas has two that I think I have total faith in, and I don't know that I can say the same thing about the collection of the Clipper stars.
So as we shift this now to talk about game three and where the series goes from here, I do think Dallas, I mean, both teams actually have a lot that I feel like both teams are playing at like a B minus level through two games. There's a lot more to these teams that they can sort of unlock. Defensively, there's been a lot there, but there's a lot more. And so I'm curious to see who gets there first. But one of the things we said about Dallas, you know, post All-Star break was we loved all the different options they had for pick and pop and pick and roll. But when you take away a Gafford and you limit a Lively, which is kind of what's happening in the series a little bit, as they've had to go to other options, play a little bit smaller. When you take those two guys out, you become a little bit less dynamic. Like PJ Washington, Derek, you know, Exum, who hasn't played very much. The other guys, Kleber, Derek Jones, guys that you're going to have rolling there are small ball rollers or pick and pop players. That's different. So I almost feel like this Zubats piece of it has downstream effects to the Mavs offense, and that you have, if your bigs aren't doing a good job of containing the Zubats problem, you know, on that end of the floor, then you don't have as much dynamic play on the other end. So that's one thing that I look at. Can those bigs play more effectively? Because I think Luka and Kyrie both are going to be scoring more, and the offense is going to be humming more when you can get that rim rolling threat more consistently.
To totally agree with you. And as a result, look, I don't know if that's going to turn around. I mean, I know what I just watched for 2 months. That's not what I've seen in these two games. So that I feel like the sample size I've been observing is much larger than two games. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm as curious as you, man. In game three, when they get back to Dallas, is Gafford a part of this series or not? And Lively to a lesser extent, but he's important too. Between the two of them, I mean, they had a lot of nights where they were getting you 25 points, 15 boards, 5 blocks. Like, that was a night out of your center spot from those two guys. Haven't seen any of that, which puts more onus on Luka. And I actually thought Luka, look, he took 26 shots in the game, 11 for 26. Not a great shooting night. Made the important ones, though, I feel like. There's so much more there for him. I do feel like even against Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, guys regarded as elite, strong, like long defenders, Terrence Mann, who's a committed defender, Luka gets whatever he wants. And so my point is this. I thought Luka actually had 5 or 6 shots he turned down in this game after he went into a move and he was going into something. And then for some reason, He just stopped as he was ready to release it. And he like pump fake, brought it down, threw it to somebody, and then got it back and reset for whatever reason. Maybe he didn't feel rhythm on the shot. The ball wasn't right in his hand or whatever it was. I think those are the plays. If Gafford and Lively continue to be limited, Luka Doncic's shot numbers are going to go up. He's going to take those situations and say, look, we're not getting that for whatever reason. They're defending it well, or Gafford's not 100%, whatever it may be. If that's not an option for them in those spots, that's going to be a Luka shot. An up fake, draw fouls, a little step back in the lane, the stuff that he likes to do, using his footwork for an up and up, whatever it may be, he's going to put that on himself in those situations to get shots. Don't be shocked if Luka Doncic has to take 30 shots in a game or two in this series. It's not going to shock me, and I think that's not necessarily a bad way to operate. Like, there are some teams I go, if that guy takes 30 shots, they're not going to win. You know, I kind of feel that way sometimes about the Knicks with Brunson and the way that he plays. If those numbers get up that high, I don't know that that's necessarily the best thing for them. I feel differently about Dallas. There's some possessions where I go, man, no. Like, you should have shot that. Like, that's the best shot your team's going to get on that possession. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, obviously, Luka wouldn't want to do that necessarily. He'd rather have all these options at his disposal to pick you apart. But right now, Gafford and Lively have not been a part of this. And I'm wondering how they find their way into this series. It's important. It's an important part of what they were doing for the last couple months.
And I'll be honest, I didn't see this coming in. We didn't talk about Zubats rendering these bigs, you know, less effective. But that's kind of been the story for me, at least through two games. And it's interesting. It's just, this is why playoffs are so interesting. A variable you didn't expect has downstream effects on all the other stuff you did expect. You know, the battlegrounds that we expected, you know, are being affected by that big matchup. And it's so fascinating. Before we move on from the series, though, is there any other thoughts you have now going into game three, or a player that you feel, you know, kind of take center stage on either side?
I just think, look, I think what we're going to be watching here the rest of this series is the extent to which Kawhi Leonard can match Luka's control, because that's what I think it's going to come down to for the Clippers. And like I said, I have faith in them, but look, I also think there's, you know, been stretches this year where Kawhi Leonard, as good as he can be and as efficient as he can be, you're always kind of watching him saying, man, it's, you know, that's not quite like what his peak was, like in Toronto, San Antonio, right? He's a little bit below, maybe not have to be, because he's got a lot of help around him. That, to me, is the series. Yeah. To what extent is there a differentiation between Luka and Kyrie? Like I said, Luka's going to outscore him. Luka's going to create more offense. But that doesn't mean necessarily on a given night he's playing better. And that is what I'm going to be watching the rest of the way, man. This is a star-driven series with timely moments out of your supporting cast. That's what this whole thing's going to be about. And I won't doubt it, man. I'm not going to doubt it. This thing goes the distance. I'm not going to doubt it at all. Really? Everybody knows I've picked Dallas to win the series. And I think they can win a game seven on the road. I have that much faith in Luka Doncic. So I would not be shocked. And I think we're going to get close games the rest of the way. And who's going to make the plays when they have to be made? That's what it's going to come down to.
Do you think we're going to see these scores, 96-93? Like, yeah. Even 105-101 is like a low-scoring game. Or do you think that these two teams both find their offensive rhythm and we get a shootout one or two times in the series?
Yeah, personally, I mean, I just watching these games and I'm looking at the looks. It's like I know the difference between watching a game and I go, man, oh man, like that defense is suffocating them right now. They just can't get space. I didn't feel that way in this game. I felt like there were good shots missed repeatedly in both games. I think that has to change. And I think the scores get up, you know, certainly over 100. I think you're going to see more, like I said, the 110-106 type scores is probably going to be a median for this the rest of the way.
I'm going to predict game three as a Kyrie game. I'm going to predict he has a big one. I think it'll be a big Luka game as well, because every game is a big Luka game. But I think that I think game three is a Kyrie game. I have confidence that the Mavericks at a minimum can split their home. And I think so. Now you're looking at it as, can you just gain both of those games? If you get it, the series is probably wrapped up. This is why I love the playoffs, though, Legs. We can cut to break now, but this is why I love the playoffs. This series is going both how I expected it, but in a different way. Like, I expected a split coming out of LA, but not the defensive battle that we've seen so far, and it's been compelling. I think, and we're going to get to this team on the other side, there's only two or three teams that have impressed me so far in the playoffs, and one of them is Minnesota. I think they're one of the few teams that have actually found their two-way rhythm. And I'm curious if Legs agrees. We'll get to that on the other side. But first, let me tell you guys about Manscaped. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. Likely you're in that demographic listening to the show. With April being National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use that promo code ALLNBA for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Their variety of products, including the new Lawnmower 5.0. So check it out. Visit manscaped.com/TCS and use code ALLNBA. Also want to tell you about DraftKings Pick 6. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and use the code ALLNBA. Did you ever play the over-under game with your friends? Were you, could you eat a piece of pizza in under 30 seconds? Or I know, I'll take the over on a minute to down the 2 liter of cola. If you have, then you're going to love Pick 6, the new fantasy game from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Here's how to play during the NBA playoffs. Pick between 2 and 6 players and choose if they'll have more or less of a stat. Rebounds, points, assists, and more. Track your picks and play against others for a shot to win huge cash prizes. It's really a cool new sort of like almost like fantasy sports and with the traditional DraftKings type stuff. So check it out. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now and use code ALLNBA for a shot at huge cash prizes. That's code ALLNBA only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 and over in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back here on the All-NBA Show, if you're watching it live, throw us a like. Don't forget to subscribe. We've been enjoying the show. We got 2 more episodes coming up for you to round out the week, covering all these playoff games. And if you're watching it late, let us know in the comments what you think. If you got a question for Legs, you can ask it down there. Maybe we'll get to it in the very next show. All right, I said there's only a few teams that have impressed me. The Timberwolves last night, first of all, they blow out the Suns in game one. The Suns had their number throughout the regular season, beating them by 10, 15 points every single time they match up. Well, now the script has flipped. And what impressed me about this one is I just talked about Dallas won ugly. That's impressive. Some of these teams have won ugly. Minnesota found a rhythm in the second half of this game that I thought was impressive. We know their defense is going to be good, and it's been impressive. We'll talk a lot about their defense on a very tough-to-cover Suns one-on-one scoring offense. But their offense found a rhythm in the second half where I was like, that's how you win. You have to have runs like that. And you question if the Timberwolves could. So they are one of the few teams that have really impressed me so far in the playoffs. Do you agree with that, or are you more unimpressed with Phoenix?
All right. Well, if I given the choice between the two, I'm going to focus on the positive and say I'm more impressed with Minnesota. Every time I watch them, I'm more impressed than I was the game before. I'll be honest with you about that. Jaden McDaniels was incredible in this game. Because yeah. He did it offensively, defensively. He's guarding all of those guys. And then offensively, chipping 10 for 17 for 25 points, 8 boards. I cannot say enough about it. Chris Finch was dead on in his praise of him after the game. We're a lot like Jalen Williams in Oklahoma City, man. We're watching these guys just emerge as all-around players capable of affecting the game every possession because of their defense. But then it's always like, you always would throw in, whatever they give you offensively is like a bonus. And they both have emerged now to guys that are just so consistently giving you that in pressure spots. So I'm so impressed with Minnesota. And I think there's one other thing. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this today, but impressed me about Minnesota last night. Anthony Edwards, I don't know that earlier in the year or last year would have had a night where he just wasn't very good offensively. He wasn't that involved. He didn't get that many opportunities. The guy had 3 field goals made in the game. At one point deep into the game, he was like 1 for 7 from the field. And yet at no point did it affect his demeanor, his intensity, his joy for the game, his leadership in that. No, seriously.
I love it.
Yeah, some young stars that have emerged like he is, and we're hyping him up, man. I'm talking about him a lot. you know, you're gonna get a little bit pouty maybe at his age when you don't get shots or feel it or rhythm. It doesn't feel like your team or your game on a given night. It's almost like normal for some guys to behave that way and act that way. And I'd cut young players, I'd cut slack. If they did act like that, I'd call them out for it, because it's the best thing that can be done to them is to get past that and understand, particularly at this time of the year, the only thing that matters is what's on the scoreboard. Nothing else matters. And you can erase bad games. If you have a great one, you better move on to the next and forget about that too. And Anthony Edwards, I felt like, handled that everything last night so well. At no point did he look like he was in his own world, man, or stewing about his own game at any point. And that is so important for this team. And I just thought that leadership quality, that took a big step forward last night for him. The way he handled himself the entire game on a night that was not his night offensively, I think he understood the importance of not letting this team get to even. You'll get to 1-1 against a team like Phoenix going home for two games, you might have a totally different series on your hands. And I just loved his demeanor, man, the way he carried himself the entire time. And all of it was genuine. He wasn't forcing it. You know, I've seen some guys not have their night, go to this bench, and they're kind of standing there and they're clapping because they have to clap. But you can tell, like, emotionally, they're all in their own stuff. He wasn't like that. And I just want to praise him for that, because I think it's a very important quality. And it says a lot about his leadership for a young player.
I love that you bring that up, because culture is set by your best players. And it just seems to me like this Timberwolves team has a phenomenal culture, just an incredible one. And your point about Ant, here's what it is. A lot of guys are scorers and they love to score on you. He's a competitor. He's a scorer too, but he is a competitor first and foremost. And, you know, scoring is only part of the competition. And he's a guy that plays that way. 12 shots. Mike Conley had more. McDaniels had more. Nikhil Alexander-Walker almost had as much. And then here's what's impressive about the Timberwolves. We know they're going to play defense, and they did a great job defensively against a good high-powered offense. But look at the scoring. All starters in double figures. Nikhil Alexander-Walker off the bench. My guy, basically the sixth starter, he's also in double figures. They went to, I mean, they played Naj Reid and Monte Morris like they always do, but they played heavy minutes for Nikhil Alexander-Walker and their starters. It's like in this series, those are the six guys, and they just play basketball. They just kind of move the ball. I want to go to Nikhil Alexander-Walker, though. His defense, to me, is such a big part of this. And the run, it was two-pronged. Part of this happened with Ant on the court, you know, in that third quarter. But part of it also happened with the McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Rudy Gobert trio. And the reason I bring this up is I'm so fascinated. We talked, I think back in like December or something, we talked about they don't play those guys a lot of minutes, but in a playoff series, those three guys are going to be among the best defensive trios you can throw out there if you can find offense for it. They got a great offensive rhythm with that group, in part because they made shots, and maybe it's just shot variance. But defensively, you have a group with all that one-on-one scoring. McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker is as good as you get at on-ball pressure, and Rudy Gobert is obviously as good as it gets at rim protection. That was the story. That was the story is those are the staggered lineups every team has to go to. And are they going to be neutrals, negatives, or positives? It was a knockout punch positive for the Timberwolves last night, being able to throw those guys at, Beal and Booker and shut them down essentially in that stretch.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Look, I'll throw Anthony Edwards into that mix too. When you have McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Anthony Edwards, you're talking about three guys with length and athleticism, right, and competitiveness, a lot of want to in those three guys to guard. So you got all that going on in the perimeter, man, where they're up in guys and they're able to pressure and take away space and fight over screens and not let guys come walking off screens into pull-up jumpers. And you're funneling them to Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns and Naz Reid when he's on the floor. It's this is why they're so good defensively. By the way, Mike Conley, he's undersized. He's not like one of the guys we just mentioned. Mike Conley has never quit on a play ever defensively. Conley's gonna fight. He's gonna fight over every screen. He's gonna do everything it takes. He's always so smart in the right place. He's not gonna have the impact because he's not as long as those guys on these three scorers, but he's there too. He's you're feeling his presence as well defensively. So they do it all right. Their personnel's great. And the most important thing is they have a bunch of guys that really like playing that end of the floor. And you can play that lineup or a defensive-oriented lineup without sacrificing everything offensively. If Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander Walker are giving you 35 points of offense, I mean, you know, it's a perfect storm. They're never going to put up massive scoring numbers. They just, they don't play that way. So this 105-93, I mean, that's like a 30-point win to me, the way the Timberwolves play. Yep. They were in total control. What's interesting about this series, Adam, so far, two games, it's been a similar pattern in that as the game goes on into mid, late third quarter, into the fourth quarter, they feel like they're getting stronger to me, and the Suns are starting to wilt. That's what it has felt like both games. And that, look, that's an indictment on their mental toughness a little bit. It's an indictment on, can those guys do it at that level against this type of defense? And I just feel like, I don't know that this is a team in Phoenix that's got that get in a trench mentality, man. Let's fight our way out of this. I don't think they're physically strong enough for this team. And I don't think they're mentally strong enough to take what Minnesota's showing you possession after possession. I think they've got one chance to get back in this. They clearly have to win game three. They have to get this to a more of a track meet. They had 2 points off of Minnesota's turnovers. Two in the entire game. Minnesota is not a team we even think about as a running team. They had 31 points off of Phoenix's turnovers. Phoenix just, they're not running. So that's where you get space before they're set up, before they're locked in. You've got to run and you've got to take some of those earlier quick threes. They took 22 threes in the game. 22 threes for a team is like that's like the 90s number. That's not now. That's 10 below their season average. They've got to play faster and they've got to play looser with their perimeter shooting. And guess what? If they have a bad shooting night and they're taking quicker shots, I got news for you, man. They can't play with this team. But you can't play at this pace offensively and win this series. You probably won't win a single game. And that's kind of what I felt about Phoenix, man. They're just getting worn down as these games go on, and they get very deflated. And when they get deflated, they quit a little bit defensively, and then the game's over.
Do you think – so let's move to Phoenix's side now. They've been pretty unimpressive to me in this playoff run so far for all the reasons you just laid out. And it's not one of these ones where it's like, well, some shots go, you know, differently, it'll be different. But now you go home. Maybe this is – we saw this in Denver last year. They struggled on the road. They come home and everybody made everything and they looked more comfortable. Do you see the similar thing here? And what does Phoenix need to do to make that happen?
They're certainly – listen – I didn't, you know, Frank Vogel, I love the man, you know, known him a long time, man. And part of that's personal. And I also think he's a good coach. I think he was trying to be as positive as he could after the game. Very matter of factly. Hey, you know, we lost two games on the road. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to go home. We're going to play well. And then you heard Durant and Booker talk, and I didn't get that vibe at all from them. You know what I mean? So there's a disconnect.
I didn't see it. So tell me, was there something specifically? Cause I actually didn't see these two. Usually I try to catch oppressors, but I didn't see this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so downtrodden, man. Holding the microphone and just kind of. Now I'm not saying you're supposed to be thrilled when you win, but I'd rather see what Anthony Davis did. Get asked a question he thought was a stupid question, right? And just like Jamal Murray made a shot, dropped the mic, walk out, clearly pissed off. I'd rather see that almost than just sit there and kind of, yeah, well, I don't know, man. We made a run, but we couldn't quite get, you know, between 12 points. And I'm just going, do you guys believe? Do you believe at all? Like, and that's what I mean. Like, you know, sometimes teams, like, you can start off a series like this and you have a real faith. Man, this series hasn't really started. We got to see change of venue first. Let's see how they play at home, the energy they're going to derive. Can they get off to a better start than they've gotten off to in these? Like, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into it. But it starts with, what is the vibe of the team? And are these guys that really love fighting together? And I don't get that feeling from this group. I just don't feel it. I could be dead wrong, man. They could be the most connected guys in the world. I'm just saying, this is an opinion. And I've been doing this a long time, so I pick up on different vibes of groups of guys and teams. I don't feel that vibe out of them. Doesn't mean that they can't go home and play a lot better and win a game. My goodness, they got three great offensive players, at least three great scorers. On a given night, you know, they can absolutely make that happen, but I don't have as much faith as I sit here in them as I do a lot of teams that lose the first two games on the road and then go home. Cause I kind of know, okay, this team's going to fight you and they're going to win game three. I feel that way a lot when the venues change. If I respect that team, I'll say they're winning game three. You can just feel it. They're not going to go down 3-0. I got to be honest with you. I don't feel that about the Suns. And it's just, I don't know, man. There's something about them that just doesn't look like a group of fighters. And it's going to take that against this team.
Well, they also got bad news with Grayson Allen yesterday, just 17 minutes, and he rolls an ankle. And that was, you know, there's light rolled ankles where you go, maybe he bounces back. That one to me looked like a couple weaker. That one looked like an 11, 12-day rolled ankle, not a 48-hour rolled ankle to me. I'm no doctor, so we'll see what happens. But that to me is an insurmountable loss. And I know that sounds like hyperbole. You still have your stars. The Stars need the fifth guy that fills that role. We loved the Royce O'Neal deal because he brought a guy off the bench to fill that role. So you kind of you play Grayson Allen and you can replace him with Royce O'Neal. But Royce O'Neal can't replace Grayson Allen's full-time minutes. He's a part-time Grayson Allen. So you lose Grayson Allen to me, and I look at that and I go, that's really tough news for the Suns, because where's your rotation now? Who enters it that's going to have to fulfill those minutes? It's probably just Royce O'Neal now steps into more minutes. To me, that really cripples them as they head home. What do you think?
Yeah, listen, I agree with you. And first of all, Grayson Allen, by the way, in the first game didn't have a field goal. And they, you have 25 minutes. I think he took four shots. So they're committed. They're going to not stay home. No help. I mean, they're going to stay home. No help responsibility on off of Grayson Allen. And now he might be taken out of the series completely. But I think they already had kind of put him at the top of the whiteboard. Like, don't let this guy be an impact player with 6, 7, 8 threes. We've seen him do it. He's not doing it against us because it's going to bail out these other three scorers. We're not going to allow that to happen. I think that might have continued. Maybe. Well, clearly Eric Gordon is a guy you'd look at. He had a pretty good game yesterday. He's capable, so he's going to get more minutes. Royce O'Neal gets more minutes. And then look, if you need to find another 10 minutes, maybe it's Bol Bol. You know, the guy can score. He can score.
Man.
You might think he's going to have some issues defensively. Bol Bol gets looks. He can find a way to put the ball in the basket. And he's got, obviously, incredible length against a team that's got great length on the perimeter. So maybe if you just need 10 more minutes, if you know, between O'Neal, Gordon, and then you find a few more minutes for Bol Bol, that's where it's going to come from. The guy most likely to impact it in a way that's significant is Eric Gordon. I think Eric Gordon can do it. And, you know, now, though, without Grayson Allen, if he's not playing, then Eric Gordon becomes that guy. They go, you know what? No matter what, we're not leaving Eric Gordon. Stay home with Eric Gordon. So it's a problem for them. I think more important than that, Adam, is this. Challenge Kevin Durant. This is who you are, man. This is one of those games. You need 35, 38, whatever the hell it takes. You can get whatever shot you want, even against this great defense we're talking about, because you're 7 feet tall, and the league has never seen a guy with your height with that level of handle and shooting in the same body. You can do it. And I think we're going to find out, is Kevin Durant still capable of doing that, which is back against the wall? Hey, guys, watch. Just get out of my way. I'm going to do this tonight. And then obviously you're going to need help from Beal and Booker and those other guys. But there's some games where it's kind of like, this is what Kevin Durant has established his reputation on, man. Games like this, go get 35, 40, whatever it takes. And we'll see if he can pull one of those out to get them back in the series.
He's almost in a tough spot because in the first game he had 31 points. He shot well, didn't make a difference. You know, they were blown out. And then last night, a little bit less of that role, 18 points, 15 shots, and they get blown out. And same thing, he's a minus 24 in this game. So I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. You need an MVP kind of performance from KD, not just a merely good one. To me, Booker still, you called him out last time. He takes 13 shots in this one. I'm actually surprised. To me, it feels like he can only get 13 shots off. And that's the thing that I think is kind of wild. And we'll see what happens when you go back and you go home. Role players make shots. Maybe the spacing's better. You get on a roll. Maybe you get the whistle. But to me, that's the thing I look at is Devin Booker, 5 assists. It's not like he's got, you know, 10 assists, so he played more of a facilitator role. 5 assists in 42 minutes, 20 points, and only 13 shots. He's the guy that I look at and I go, is he capable of getting 20 shots off and 30 points in this series with the type of defense they're throwing at him? If the answer is no, I'm not optimistic about the Suns getting a game in this series, let alone winning it.
Totally agree with you. Listen, you got three elite scorers on the same roster. And on the night, last night, not one of them was exceptional. Not one of them. That can't happen. You can't, you're not going to win a game unless that changes. And, you know, two would be great. You get two guys. One guy maybe is outstanding. One guy's really good. And then the other guy has an average to below average night. That's what you are hoping when you sign three guys up together of this level. You're certainly not hoping what you got last night, which was the three players I'm talking about collectively were a minus 59 in the game. That can't happen. So that's where's it coming from? Booker 6-for-13, Beal 6-for-17, Durant 6-for-15. That's just mediocrity. If you look up up in the dictionary, it's what happened last night with those three players. Somebody of the three has to go off. They've got to go off, one of them at least. And then it might take two. Who knows? But let's see who it's going to be. Is it Durant or is it Booker? Those are the two guys you're looking at mostly. And you know, Beal's capable, but Durant and Booker are most likely.
The Timberwolves, to me, look like they're ready for this moment, especially in this series. It goes back to Phoenix. Now the onus is on Phoenix to flip it. They'll be shorthanded Grayson Allen. I'm not holding my breath.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's quickly wrap up, though, by the other game that happened here. Another very interesting one, which is the Pacers get the win over the Bucks, 125-108. They do it largely behind that second half run, late second half run, really end of third quarter, start of the fourth quarter. And, you know, I thought Siakam, 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. He's the story for me, how aggressive he was. But the run actually happened with guys like Ben Shepherd, TJ McConnell, and some of the staggered lineups. Siakam was out there as well. But I guess we could start with Siakam because it's two games in a row where he's put up big numbers. What did you see from this one, and what have you seen from him in this series? That Dame made shots in both games, but Siakam to me has been the more complete, doing more things throughout both of the games and especially last night.
This is as dramatic a flipping of the script from one game to the next as I've seen in a long time. The first game, I thought Indiana was unrecognizable. They were walking the ball up the floor a lot. Tyrese Halliburton did not look sure of himself at all. That wasn't the offense I watched all year. I picked Indiana to win this series. I still think they've got a really good chance to win this series. So what happened in game one, what I just described, and at the exact same time, Damian Lillard goes nuclear on them in the first half and basically ends the game in the first half. And then I kept watching the game because I did see some encouraging things out of Indiana defensively in the second half that gave me some hope that, like, okay, you know, if that goes on, it is a 40-point game and you don't learn anything about yourself. I thought they learned some stuff about themselves in the second half, and Siakam even alluded to it after the game last night, that it meant a lot to them to watching the film, some of the success they had in the second half of the game. It carried over to the start of this one. But the most important thing was they came out of the block and out of the gate immediately intent on forcing the issue with their pace.
Yeah.
And they did it, man. They had 38 assists in this game. The ball was flying up the court, and then it was around the perimeter, dribble drive kick. When they're at their best, it looks almost in some ways like a really high-level college team, the way that they keep repeatedly getting into the paint, finding the next guy. I just thought their motor was exceptional, led by Siakam. It's why he's been one of my favorite players in the league for a decade. Pascal Siakam, it's his motor. He's relentless. He never stops going or never stops coming at you. And some nights when he puts it together and he's really making shots, it looks like last night. He has those kind of stat lines. And he did it. So he was like the epitome of what they need to be, but everybody followed suit. Everybody followed suit. And I just thought, this is what I expected this series to look like, because Milwaukee, I thought, would have a very difficult time guarding them and slowing them down if they get to their style. They didn't in the first game. They absolutely did last night. And that's the Indiana Pacers team that I expected to see in this series.
What about Halliburton? 12 points, 12 assists. Now, obviously, facilitating is part of his game. Getting out on the break, that's the biggest part of his game. But the 12 points, to me, stands out quite a bit. And this is two games. It's really an extended streak where he hasn't been scoring like he was at early part of the season. Is that a concern at all? Or do you think their offense got 125 points? He didn't need to score.
No, it's a concern, because it's, you know, it's like the 125 is great. And I just described it. It was like, it felt like their style. And what I recognized, so it might get glossed over and you might not think it matters. It matters because of this trend that he has been in now for a while, where, you know, it was at a point he was at, and look, part of this, maybe not his fault, man, his rise was meteoric. Yep. Right in front of our eyes, right in the middle of the early stages of a season. In 1 month, like, Tyrese Halliburton and the level of awareness of who he is on a national level, it was incredible to watch what happened to him. And so maybe part of it was that, man. It was too much, too fast, and maybe overstated at the time on like what he is as a scorer. It all came together for him during that run and the in-season tournament and all of that. And it was just a highlight reel, the way he was stringing together shots. He's not hunting shots to that extent right now. He's not making them, clearly, but he's just not as aggressive in looking for his own shot. So I'm trying to figure out, what ultimately is Tyrese Halliburton going to be at this level? There's no doubt he makes guys better because of his vision and passing, and he gives it up willingly at the right time. He makes guys want to play with him. It's a great quality. That's always there every night. But the scoring was something that I thought, you know, when you have a guy capable of doing what I just said, and then he also, like, on a bad night gets you 20, and on a good night can get 30, 35, like, man, oh man, you got like an all-league player here. And we haven't seen that as much over the last couple of months. So your guess is as good as mine, Adam. And I think maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves with Tyrese Halliburton, and let's wait and see. And we might need another half a season under our belt of watching him next year to get a really an idea of like where he's going to settle in as a scorer. The leadership, the point guard skills, the vision, all that stuff, that's not going anywhere. That's there every night.
Yeah.
The scoring, though, is a major factor for this team and a major factor for him in terms of his ceiling and upside. And I just don't think maybe we know yet, because definitely, you know, he's not aggressively looking at as much as he was earlier in the year when he caught all of our attention.
And this is a series, I'm going to take the Halliburton over on points in game three. And the reason is this: when I was watching this game, I was blown away at how many pick and roll three-point opportunities there were for Halliburton. And he didn't take them. It was almost like it was in his head: don't settle for that. Let's get the ball moving. Let's do other stuff. You get home, and in particular, if you can get a lead, those threes become haymaker threes. The risk is lower. If you're up 8 points at home, the risk of an early shot clock three in pick and roll becomes lessened. It's like, hey, it's worth it, because if you hit that, the momentum starts to spiral. Do they change their coverage with the Brook Lopez? Do they do different things? And last night, I just kept watching going, huh, he's open enough to take a wide open three at the top of the key. That's a shot you would usually want, and he was being more patient with it. By the way, in that game, what was it, six threes from the big fella Lopez? You get that. You shot 40% as a team and you lose by 20-something points or 20 points. Not a great sign, in my opinion, for the Milwaukee Bucks to expect to shoot better than that as you go on the road. To wrap up, Legs, I want to ask this, because I just said, of the teams we've seen so far in the playoffs, Minnesota has a stretch that I've been impressed with so far. They've had a stretch. I'm not saying they've been impressive the whole time, but they've had stretches. Boston obviously looked great in their matchup. I don't know how much you can read into it. Is there anybody else that you've watched and said, that's impressive? They look like they're in a rhythm. Not that they got an impressive win, but that they've looked impressive doing it.
I mean, I think Boston was pretty impressive in their first game. I thought Indiana last night, but I think, you know, if you're talking about any team that's done it now, like twice, like two games, and they've really been impressive. Now Minnesota's probably at the top of the list.
I agree.
And I would say Denver as well. Denver's been very impressive. What they did in that second game with the Lakers on a night when LeBron, AD, and D'Angelo Russell played like that, and Denver still won that game in the way they operated late, very impressed with them. But I think the totality of teams that have played two games being like as thoroughly impressed for the most of those two games, I think Minnesota probably more than anybody.
I agree. And it's like you said, same with Dallas. That's how I look at Denver. It's impressive that they won, but they didn't play impressively. They competed impressively, but I still am waiting for that. There it is. That's the team that can find a rhythm and that really scares you. And I'm waiting on that for everybody. But like you said, Boston and Minnesota. So maybe we'll see more tonight. Six Super Chats. Emma, let's get to those. We had six of them today. I think it's a new record, Legs. The people are paying to chat. Psycho Blue says, Basketball Cthulhu was impressed with the fireback of the Mavericks after that last game. I think the second quarter was the lowest scoring for one team's quarter in playoff history at 8. Yeah, that was in game one. That was an ugly one. He's impressed. You're impressed as well. We're impressed. Frank says, why doesn't Harden get called offensive foul when he kicks everybody midair?
He's pretty subtle about it at times. He's pretty good at it. I agree. They take a look at him. I think when it gets overt, it's not something that I think that in general is so extreme that you're going to, you know, put an end to that right away. The league looks for it more. And if it is to the point where he's going out of his way to really do that, they're going to catch him.
Yeah. All right, what do we got? What's the next one here? Cam says, Russ provided energy for the Clips while both teams struggled in half court. Could he see more minutes / be a difference maker later in the series? I'll give my take real quickly on this one. I thought he was really good last night. I actually thought he was a good player. The thing is, you count on Russ to give you what he gave you last night. Hustle. Oh, what happened here? Did we fall down?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm losing power. I just make sure I don't lose.
Gotcha. There you go. We're good. He plays hard and he gives you what he gave you last night. But if you're counting on him to be more than that, I think you're going to miss more often than you're going to hit on that type of thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I, Westbrook is one of those guys, man. I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart for. He was legitimately my favorite player in the league.
Really?
For 4 to 5 years. Yeah. I mean, along with Curry, like those two guys were just, for me, would not miss one of their games. The stretch he had with Durant the last two or three years, and then that first year or two after Durant, for me, I just was like, I knew exactly what this is going to be a 2.5 hour investment of my time. I know what this is going to look like. I'm going to be thoroughly entertained, and I have incredible respect for anybody that cares that much, that plays that hard with that level of energy. And I still feel that way about him. And he did it again in the first game. He had a major impact in the game. I thought he had an impact last night. It's always going to be there. What you're always going to question, and as the series gets deeper and tougher, is decision making. That's what you're going to question about Westbrook, and I think that's what we're gonna look at. But look, even on the nights he doesn't play well and doesn't shoot well or misses threes or turns the ball over a few times, I don't know, man. I still just have so much respect for a guy that leaves that much skin on the floor every night, man. It matters to him. He is a competitor, and so I respect it. Bottom line, and he's gonna have moments where he really helps you, and he's gonna have some moments where he gets a little bit out of control and ahead of himself. It's just the nature of who Russell Westbrook is.
What's next, Emma? Psycho Blue's back. He says B-Ball Cthulhu also stands on business and says the Suns L10 playoff tuner is looking insufficient so far. It's not over yet, but one way or another, there's bound to be chaos in the Valley of the Cursed Sun come next week. I'm predicting it's the off-season varietal of chaos. That's just my take. I think this series is a 4 or 5 gamer. And unfortunately, I don't know how much Legs and I will spend on it because we like to talk about the games. But I think the conversation next week is what happens in Phoenix with this breakup of this team. That's my take. What do you think, Tip?
Do you think Frank Vogel's getting fired if they're losing this in 4 or 5 games?
Honestly, less so than typically. Typically, I would say, yes, absolutely, that's the easiest one. But I don't think anybody looks at this roster and says they needed a better motivator. They needed a better X and O's.
Yeah, because my answer to that would be, okay, well, who is the right coach, man?
That's what I mean. For this group?
Like, seriously, I mean. Who is it? Who do you want? Who do you want? Yeah. Let's go get them. Whoever it is, let's go get them.
Yeah, because he's out there somewhere.
At some point, man, at some point, those guys, first of all, even if Frank Vogel didn't know anything about coaching offense, he's known for his defense. And people think he's not a great offensive coach. Come on, man. The guy is super smart. He knows enough about offense. The bottom line is Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal are supposed to be smart enough offensive players that they can figure a lot of this stuff out themselves and work through it together. That's the bottom line. And so, I think he could be in trouble because that's the nature of these situations. They brought him in. It's going to feel like an incredible underachievement if they lose this thing in 4 or 5 games. And this isn't the Nuggets that they're going to lose to potentially. This is the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are a really good team, but have no cachet coming in. They haven't won anything together. They haven't won a round in the playoffs together. This isn't the Nuggets, the Celtics. This isn't those teams. It's going to feel really bitter when this ends. And if that's the case, you know what teams typically do, man. That's where they look. And so I hate to say it, but I think Frank Vogel could be in trouble if they lose this thing and they get, 4 or 5 games or 6 even.
I see my favorite Perpich in the chat says Jelko Obradovic. You realize a European coach, dictator coach coming in and trying to coach that team is the worst thing you could do? Come on. Frank says Kyrie deserves props. He played good defense too. We mentioned it, man. We mentioned it on the show. Kyrie was great.
We gave him all the props he needs, man. You want his flowers? We sent him flowers, man. He got flowers day long. Very impressed with Kyrie. He competed. He's competing. He's playing hard. Luka too. I've been really high on Kyrie really all season. I've been impressed with his accepting of the lane he's in, because this is when he excels.
Jay Money says, we need a segment of the pod for a first team all my guys list from Adam. We need it. Maybe that's a DraftKings segment, Emma. Tonight, Jaime Jaquez, Trey Murphy, and Kenny Hustle, Kenrich Williams. Those are my guys coming in tonight. So you
maybe
know
that is going to be a segment in the future. It's a little different than winner of the week, my guy of the week. That might be a segment where we find that dude for whatever reason, man. We want to give him some love. I like it.
Shout out Ben Shepherd. He was underratedly good. Smooth Slide says, thank you both for your analysis. Always a pleasure. Currently my go-to NBA podcast. We appreciate that, man. We love doing the show. Two great ones this week because the games have been so phenomenal. 2-1-8 matchups tonight. I don't know if the games will be phenomenal, although I'll tell you, Legs, very excited for the Pelicans Thunder. Pelicans felt like they let one go. So now I'm curious, does that mean that they just get blown out in game 2 because they missed their window? Or does it mean that this series, they have something they can exploit? I don't know the answer to that. What do you think?
I don't either, but I was kind of thinking the same thing and leaning toward Oklahoma City playing great in game 2.
Me too.
And kind of winning this thing by 15-20 because they've been so good all year, especially at home. New Orleans, that's the one you probably needed without Zion to make this a really long series. I have a feeling Oklahoma City is going to come away tonight. Very impressive.
Well, there you go. Legs, anything? Did you want to plug anything? You got a bunch of shows coming up this afternoon as well, so I know you got to run to the next one. Anything for people to look out for?
I got some SportsCenter hits. Yeah, I got all kinds of stuff going on today, but only thing I'll say is getting back real quick, last thing, if we can ever get Nikhil Alexander-Walker on the same team to run a two-man game with Isaiah Hartenstein, I think you then, just to see one of those ball screens with those two players, you could quit that day. You're done. You've seen all you need to see, and you can die a happy man.
Am I wrong? Hartenstein, no. Game-saving block.
Am I wrong?
Kill Alexander Walker out here locking up Devin Booker. I'm just saying. My guys are doing well.
No. I love it, man. I love it. We got to get Hartenstein. We got to get Hartenstein on as a guest one day, man.
We really should, man. I'm hyping him up so much. I'm his biggest fan. All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hit that like button for us on the way out. We'll see you tomorrow. Silly like the mayor.